You're listening to Heartland Politics with Robin Johnson, a presentation of WVIK, Quad Cities, NPR.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Heartland Politics show and podcast, which is aired on and distributed by WVIK Public Radio in the Quad Cities. WVIK is the flagship public radio station in the Quad Cities region of northwestern Illinois and eastern Iowa. This is your host, Robin Johnson, and as listeners to this podcast know, I like to take a break from the usual political office holders, pundits and politicos as guests who give opinions on what's going on in politics and government, and I like to take a look at leading figures from the entertainment industry and how they have influenced our culture, which of course has a major impact on our politics. Some say politics is culture, culture is politics. This is one of those shows, one I've been looking forward to, because the person we're focusing on is a star from the 60s. Our focus is Steve McQueen, and my guest has written several books about him, including the latest called McQueen in His Own Words. It's a really great book, and I really advise everyone to get a copy and take a look. We'll provide more information on where you can get it later. He's Marshall Terrell. And he'll share more about this Hollywood legend and why he's still relevant to us today. Marshall, thanks so much for being on.
Hey, it's a pleasure. Thank you for the great intro.
I really enjoyed this book, full of photos and quotes about Steve McQueen. And as I said, you've written several books. You've written one about Johnny Cash, Elvis, Billy Graham, Pete Maravich, and others. But you've written, this is your fourth on Steve McQueen. Why the interest in this particular star?
Well, I hate to correct you on the first question, but I think it's my sixth.
Sixth? Okay. Sorry. Sixth.
It is my sixth. Yeah. I did a couple of books about McQueen with other people. I did one with a gentleman by the name of Don Nunley regarding Le Mans, and I did one with his wife, his widow, Barbara McQueen, called Steve McQueen, The Last Mile.
Okay.
So I think those are the... So,
thanks for that correction.
My last one, my latest one, and the why the interest of Steve McQueen. That's always like the one question I really can't sort of answer, other than just I know Steve McQueen well. I know kind of what made him tick. He was kind of an enigma, but he was contradictory, and he was wonderful to write about. You know, when you get characters, and I shouldn't say character because he was a real life person, but when you get people that are contradictory in nature, and you don't know what they're going to do next, or you've got them pinpointed, and they're so interesting that they never become boring to you. And he's just one of those people that has just never become boring to me. And then, as we talk about his relevance, he's more relevant today than he ever has been. Because he resonates with so many people, and so it just never gets boring to write about him.
Well, I was fascinated. We'll get to that his resonance to this day. We'll get to that in a little bit. But of course, I was fascinated right off the get go. I had no idea that he was actually born and raised right here in the Midwest heartland, and kind of share with our listeners his early years, where he was from here in the Midwest, and also his upbringing as far as family.
He was born to two alcoholic parents, and so the key to remember here is that he was shuffled around quite a bit as a young kid. And so his mother, I think, was 18 or 19. His father was a merchant marine who met up with her, and most likely in a bar, and she gets pregnant. He's born in a very, very small place called Beech Grove, Indiana, which is just right there in Indianapolis. And his first couple of years, he's raised by his mother's grandparents in Indianapolis, the first 3 to 4 years. And then then the Great Depression, which had already, he was born in 1930, like 6 months after the Great Depression. But, the aftermath of the Great Depression hits really hard 3 or 4 years later. And then the grandparents are hitting hard times, and then they bring him up to Slater, Missouri, to where Steve's granduncle, his name was Claude Thompson. He was a prosperous hog farmer. And so the grandparents then hand him off to Claude, who then raises him as his own. And then, he helps Claude on the farm with everything, with the animals and the hogs. And he lives in a kind of like the outskirts of town. And so, it's a really interesting existence for him. He talked about his loneliness growing up. But he also talked about his Uncle Claude being a very hard but fair man, and those were the kind of the traits that were instilled in him. And then when he gets to Hollywood and he has his own set of kids, he does not have spoiled Hollywood kids. He's pretty tough on his kids, and he instills in them those Midwestern values that were instilled in him. So it carried with him the rest of his life, because one of the quotes in that book is, "I'm half street people and I'm half farmer," and he knows both sides of humanity. And when he talks about street people, when he gets to be 13 or 14, he gets sent to a reform school back in Los Angeles where his mother lives. So, but before that, he's running around on the streets. So he's got this really, really interesting life where he's spent it on the farm and spent it in a small town, and then he gets to Los Angeles and he's now kind of running around with gangs and hanging out with them, getting into trouble, getting into fights, breaking into businesses, stealing hubcaps, shooting pool, and then of course he gets into the Boys Republic, which was a reform school without any you know, walls or fences, but they didn't need any because they were out in the boonies and there was nowhere to go to. So it was a very, very interesting young life.
And he never forgot that experience because he provided scholarships for that school throughout his life, it looked like.
That's correct. And even to this day, they have an annual car show, which raises almost now about $500,000 a year for those kind of scholarships. And it's now open to boys and girls. So that's the kind of place where people who have had a hard past come up and they instill all these they prepare these young people for society, just like they did with Steve McQueen. For example, they have like an example of a city council or a town council, and they have their own banking and their own post office, and the kids run the place. And so they get prepared for society. So Steve McQueen, yes, he never forgot it, because one of his famous quotes was, if I hadn't have become an actor, I would have wound up a hood. And that was certainly true, because he was on his way there. And then when he was released from Boys Republic, he was there 18 months. You know, back then there were really not a whole lot of economic choices for young men, especially young men with a ninth grade education. And so he decides that he's going to join the Marines when he's 17 years old, because he said that he knew it was going to give him a sense of discipline. It would have continued that discipline from the Boys Republic.
It's interesting that people from that era that didn't have as much to do go into the military, and they know. I know people, that's my dad's generation, that admitted that the military is what they needed at that point in their life. How did he? It looked like he took advantage of the GI Bill to some degree, and he admitted that he wasn't the best student, that type of learning and classroom learning. But when he gets out, how then does this guy who grew up on the streets and farm and kind of a tough life up to this point, how does he then get into acting?
Well, that's interesting in and of itself, because there was one in chapter of my book, it was called 5 Years in Limbo, and that's what he does. He spends 5 years hitchhiking across the country, taking up odd jobs. He's a lumberjack in Canada. He's a sandal maker. He carries out radiators and can condemn buildings in New York City. He gets caught hanging out in a park, and then he gets thrown on a chain gang. So he had all these interesting life experiences. Now, of course, he doesn't know this at the time, but when he does decide to become an actor, he leans on all those incredible experiences that he had. A lot of young people who are in their early 20s, coming out of college, don't have those life experiences. And so when they're asked to call on these things while they're in acting, they probably kind of come up short, but Steve McQueen never came up short. So how he got into acting was that he was dating a beautiful dancer. And she basically said, look, you're so kooky and you're so weird, you would fit in perfectly with acting. So he had the GI Bill, which you mentioned earlier, and he used that. And he applied himself to acting, and the acting coach was a very famous man by the name of Sanford Meisner, and he also discovered Marilyn Monroe. And he said these two had this childlike innocence, but they also had this tough exterior, and if he could get it, if they can tap into that, which they did, they could become wonderful actors. And so that's how Steve McQueen became an actor. The other thing I should add is that he liked acting, because he didn't want to have a 9-to-5 job, and he knew that there were a lot of women in acting, and those were the reasons he got into it. But then when he got into it, and he got this wonderful positive feedback, which is probably the first positive feedback he'd ever received in his life, it made him work harder and harder.
And he was just fascinating how he got from where he began his life to being an actor, as you portray. And I love that the fact that all those hard times really went into his excellent performances on the screen, because he kind of knew the life, knew the characters that he was portraying to a large degree.
Absolutely. When he picked up a gun or a shovel, or was in a uniform, he knew exactly what the mentality was. He knew how to use a gun. He knew how to use a shovel. He knew how to use an axe. And the interesting thing is that I talk to a lot of military people. My dad was in the military, but when we come across Steve McQueen, they say, that guy portrayed a military man better than anyone that I've ever seen. More realistic. And that's true. He brought such a realism to his roles. That 20th century all-American man, you would almost add blue collar to that description.
Yeah.
But that's exactly who he was.
You're listening to Heartland Politics on WVIK Public Radio in the Quad Cities. This is your host, Robin Johnson, and today I'm having fun. If you can't tell, our focus is something a little different that I like to do on occasion. Our topic today is the actor Steve McQueen. Many of you of a certain age have heard of him. Like me, I lived through the 60s, 70s when he was most prominent in his acting career. And I'm talking with the author of a series of excellent books, Marshall Terrell, whose most recent book is called In His Own Words. It's a big book. It's all pictures and it's quotes, and it's literally Steve McQueen in his own words. And I urge folks who have an interest in this to get a copy and look through it. It's a great book. Marshall, let's get right into his movies. What was his breakthrough hit, his first big movie? And how did he get from that? And then he got into a TV series, which is still on. I see it on some of the cable stations periodically, a Western. But how did he get, what was his first big hit that made him famous?
Well, if we're going to measure Steve McQueen, it's not an easy answer, because what had happened was the interesting thing is the movie Once Upon a Time in Hollywood really captures this well. And the lead character, he's a TV star who's trying to make the transition to movies, because back then there was a big line of demarcation between movies and television. And at the time, Steve McQueen was starring in a TV series called Wanted Dead or Alive, where he was a Western cowboy bounty hunter. And so he did it for 3 years, but he did not like the idea that he was going to be stuck into a series, because these were 14 to 18 hour days. And, he liked racing on the weekends as well. So, I mean, every minute of his day was filled, but his goal was always to get into the movies. So in the summer when they were on summer hiatus, he would try to film a movie. So his first big film, which was not a big film at all, but it was called Never So Few. It starts Frank Sinatra. And Sinatra was the kind of guy that when he made a movie, he was there from 9 to 5, and at 5 o'clock, he stepped off the set, and he had a martini and a limo waiting for him, and off he went. And so he basically turned to the director and said, give the kid all the close-ups. And so McQueen, so this was a good little starring role for him, but it wasn't a star-making film. But what it did was it brought him to the attention of producers and studios. Okay, this is a young man that we need to be paying attention to. And so the next film that he did was he got second billing, and that was Magnificent Seven, opposite Yul Brynner. And he took that and he made it even bigger and expanded. And so now he was set up to hit the home run. And that home run came in the form of the 1963 movie, The Great Escape, in which it was an ensemble cast, but Steve McQueen had the lead role. And the interesting thing was he was about to walk off that picture, because the original script didn't have all those little things that made McQueen a star. He recognized that. He walked off the set till they brought back a writer that would work with him on his little bits. And part of his little bits was to be separated from the cast and to bring in that baseball mitt and the ball and throw it in solitary confinement. So that movie made him a big star. And then, of course, from there, you know, his stardom really, really peaks with Bullet, which is 5 years later, which made him into a superstar. So from that point on, he was a superstar, and every movie that came out was really kind of a big event, like you would see like with a movie hero event today. He was really that big, and that's how big his films were.
If there's one word that I think people would use, if you were to ask what one word would describe Steve McQueen, it would be cool, the king of cool. And for our listeners, what movies led up to that? You did a really good job in the book of you listed five movies. He had five big hits in a row in the 60s, and they were all different to some degrees. He developed his acting abilities, but which movie or series of movies gave him that reputation as being the king of cool?
Well, I think obviously The Great Escape, that's where the legend starts. You can take any number of films that he did, from that point on. The Cincinnati Kid, he's a fantastic card player. But he's very cool, not a whole lot of dialogue, works with his eyes. And that was kind of like a movie about, gunfighters with a deck of cards. Of course, Bullet, you have to mention. That's where he plays a cool cop. In a time that's not unsimilar to today, where there's a lot of unrest. And in the late 1960s, the idea of him playing a cop went counter to what the studios wanted and what McQueen wanted, but his wife actually talked him into it, basically telling him, hey, if you did something different with this role, you could really do, this could be something. And he did. He played a counterculture cop who didn't necessarily like authority, played by his own rules. And the kids of the day could really look at that and say, hey, he's one of us. And it goes back to that quote about, I'm half street person, I'm half farmer. So he applied all that to his roles. Another one that I would want people to see is a movie called The Getaway that he did with Ally McGraw. He plays a prisoner, a bank robber. And it's the first time, kind of like in cinematic history, where the bad guy kind of gets away and you're rooting for the bad guy. And that's The Heavy. And that's kind of a first time. But he's so brilliant in that. I mean, he plays like this caged wild animal that is understated, but there are flashes in there where he's very, very violent. But, that movie is, I think, the closest to the real Steve McQueen that you'll ever see in movie form. And then, of course, there's Papillon, where he gives a master class in acting. He plays a prisoner, which I kind of consider it like a part two of The Great Escape, but an older, tattered version of him. And McQueen really should have won an Oscar for that role. He was fantastic in it. And then if you want to see McQueen as an older person who was settling into old age and but worked the camera so well, Tom Horn is kind of one of those underrated Westerns that didn't get a whole lot of notice when it first came out because it was the same year that he passed away, and he had been away from the screen for 5 years. So when he came back, all the older people knew who he was, but the younger kids didn't know who he was. So those are the ones that I would suggest first.
I was in the market for, and this just happened last year, for a lightweight jacket. And I'm looking around the internet, and here pops one brand, and the name escapes me. And it was worn by Steve McQueen in one of his movies. I had no idea, but anyway, I bought it on the spot because of that. And I found out that was the Thomas Crown Affair, which was just remade recently. But he also became a fashion icon, which I really wasn't aware of until your book, but also the memory of purchasing that jacket last year.
Well, that's right. And that's the unique thing about him is that he is a fashion icon, and he became a fashion icon after his death because what these estates started doing was marketing these dead icons. And so how do you market them? Well, you do it with products. I think the Gap was the first big venture that the estate undertook. I think the campaign went Steve McQueen wore Get Khakis, and they had a picture of him back in the 60s. But the interesting thing about McQueen was he always looked timeless. And so they did the same thing with Persol glasses. These are $400 sunglasses that are collapsible, and McQueen wore those in the Thomas Crown Affair. and you know, sweaters and jackets and everything that he wore became fashionable almost 50 years later with young kids, especially Europeans and foreigners, because they're very, very much into fashion. So that kind of brings it all back together.
He died fairly young, and we won't get into that, tragically, from cancer. There's a story to that, but I'll let folks look at that in the book, read more about it there. But in looking back, why if somebody's listening going, why should we care about this? What was his impact, his legacy on American culture, and why is he still relevant today?
Well, he crosses over into several areas. I mean, we'll talk about the acting, but we talked about the fashion icon, motoring. He had a huge impact on motoring because he was one of the first celebrities that pushed motorcycles and pushed motoring in his films. And of course, you know, that was that at the time was a small cottage industry. Now, of course, it's everywhere. And then he got into antique planes, and antique motorcycle collecting. And so now that's all part of the mainstream now. But going back to the acting, his acting was more influential on today's action icons than you'll see plenty of his influence on stars like Dwayne "The Rock" Johnson. You know, they mentioned McQueen as their icon, the guy that they watch, because his acting was very simple. It was understated. It was, and so he created the archetype for today's action star: Jason Statham, Kevin Costner. All these guys, they played the role, the archetype. This is what McQueen created: the guy that kind of is the outsider who walks into a situation, mayhem breaks out, and then he's kind of the smartest guy in the room, and he's got to fight his way out of it. But he never ever starts a fight, but he's always the guy that finishes it. So he has this code. And it seems like every young actor today has adopted that code. It reminds me of the saying about The Wild Bunch and Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. Those two movies came out the same year. Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid was the most popular one, biggest box office, but The Wild Bunch was the film that influenced all these young filmmakers decades later. So it's the same thing with McQueen. McQueen influenced all these young actors that decades later kind of sprang up. And, I mean, again, if you're looking at action movie heroes, that they all kind of play the same type of person, and that's the person that McQueen created.
Is it fair to say he represented in that era some of the quote, cool, king of cool actors, Marlon Brando, et cetera, where they staked out personas that were individualistic, emphasizing freedom? And is it, you know, can we draw a link there between, you know, the questioning of authority to now in our world where we do have more questioning of authority, we do celebrate more individualism and freedom? Has that been kind of a legacy as well to some degree?
Oh, I absolutely believe that. He to me represents like the man on the motorcycle going out into the countryside. He doesn't really need anything else other than his backpack and his gear and his motorcycle. And whatever he's going to do, he's going to make it. And so, you know, he was a guy that pulled himself up by the bootstraps. In a way, he is the American story. He is the American dream. A kid who came from nothing, who climbed to the top of the Hollywood ladder and he got everything, but he always remained himself, and he always remained, he always had that persona of the outsider, working, not within the system, but always us trying to the man against the machine. And you know, that resonates more today than anything, because yeah, everybody questions authority today. You know, we always wanted to say back in the 60s that was the case, but now it's kind of come back full circle, and if not even more. So I always try to use the year 1968 as the benchmark to everything, and now it seems like everything has surpassed that moment. But to get to your point, yeah, McQueen was the ultimate individual. Didn't have too many friends, and whatever friends he did have, they weren't necessarily in the business. He had his own set of friends. He didn't want to mix his business with his pleasure. He sought you out if he wanted you as a friend. You couldn't seek him out. And so he was very, very suspicious of people. because, you know, because he was famous. But he was definitely a rugged individual all the way to the end of his life, because he flew his own planes, drove his own race cars. You know, if there was a flat tire on the freeway, or if your car broke down, he could get under the hood and fix it. A lot of people can't say that today.
And for folks out there who love motorsports, some great photos in here. You'll love this book. I have to ask just one more question, because we're about out of time. I do want to throw in real quick, though, if you're wondering about Steve McQueen's politics, there's some very conflicting things in the book that makes him even more interesting to me. That you'll think, well, on this issue, well, he sounds like a Republican, this issue more Democratic. Get the book and you'll see what I mean, because he is an interesting character when it comes to those things. But final question, and this is kind of unfair, but I'm going to put you on the spot. For those out there that are stayed with us here and are interested, maybe younger in our audience, what are, say, three or four movies that you think are the defining movies in McQueen's career that somebody looking at him for the first time would get a full appreciation for his talents?
Well, I definitely say Bullet would be the number one. It's a slow-moving film. The pacing's different, because today's pacing's just a lot different. But allow the movie to breathe. Yeah, it's a mood movie. So watch Bullet. I would also say then watch Papillon, because you're going to get some fantastic acting. You're going to root for a guy who's in prison, who's trying to break out. And then I'd say Great Escape. That is a great ensemble piece. They play it every Christmas in England. You'll get a nice taste of World War II, what that was about. But you know, he was another prisoner of war in this one, who defies authority. And even though he's a selfish guy, he takes one for the team in a very, very rare instance in his career. So those are the three I'd give you.
Perfect. Well, there you go, folks. You're free to agree or disagree. Sand Pebbles is another one we didn't even talk about. That was a great one. But we've run out of time, but I've really been pleased to have Marshall Terrell as my guest today. He's an author of a wide range of books, and his latest on Steve McQueen is called In His Own Words. Great book, a heavy book, tons of photos and quotes. You'll like it. I will have this gentleman back on my show, because I do want to get his book on Johnny Cash and read it, and have you back sometime to talk about that. Marshall, thanks so much for being my guest today.
Hey, my pleasure.
Heartland Politics is a production of WVIK, Quad Cities NPR. If you enjoyed this conversation, you can hear more on the Heartland Politics podcast, available at WVIK.org, in the WVIK app, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.